Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Brown. She is Marjorie Egan. Here with us in Studio 3 is there every Monday for All Revved Up, our Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. And we're going to go back in time with a reminder of where each of them were on the Catholic Church last week. Here I am reading them a news report. Gays had gifts to offer the church and should be accepted, and that there were, quote, positive aspects to a couple living together without being married.
Last week, on a scale of 5, I gave our Pope a 2. Okay. I give him a 2.25.
This is huge!
Huge. That was Emmett Price. In any case, Reverend Irene Monroe is a syndicated religion columnist. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. His latest book is called The Black Church and Hip-Hop Culture, Towards Bridging the Generational Divide. What a difference a week makes. Hello to both of you.
Hey, thanks for having us back.
Good to be here.
Thanks.
Okay, so the wind is a little bit out of our sails, those of us who are hoping they're going to be great things for the LGBT community and the church, as well as divorced and remarried Catholics. What's your take, Irene?
Well, that's why I gave him a robust 2.25.
And now
I rescind.
Quarter?
That's exactly
right.
Okay. Just as the church backpedaled on the issue. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this is the problem. The church has a crisis not only of faith, but of identity as well as integrity. You know, interestingly enough, when they first came out last week, we were quite excited about it. They had a statement that says welcoming homosexual persons that after a while changed the language and became less welcoming by saying providing for homosexual persons. They changed partners to these people. So I'm quite disappointed.
Yeah, I'm disappointed too, but not as disappointed as you are probably or Jim is, but I'll tell you why in a minute.
Well, let's hear from Emmett first.
What do you think, Emmett?
I am still a believer in the Pope.
Oh,
now the church I'm upset with.
You,
right?
My guy.
And see, here's the thing. I love the fact that the Pope said, if you're going to vote, we want to know how you voted. And he publicized the vote. That's huge. Now, for the church, I mean, this is the analogy of the baked cake, right? So you bake a cake, you make the batter, and they usually taste the batter. And unfortunately, there's a little too much sugar in the batter, so they went back and they changed the recipe before they put it in the oven and baked it. So the final outcome of the cake...
I will never eat your cake. just absolutely know that. Absolutely know that.
Now, I don't do that, Irene, but I'm just saying what happened.
No, can I tell you what the problem is? The guy who captured it, in my estimation, is Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle. I hope that's pronounced right, from the Philippines. Here's his quote. Some people might sense that the welcoming, the space that's been opened, meaning the preliminary report, was suddenly closed. That is not the case. Openness remains. Had we not read what we read in the middle, which apparently did not represent either a majority or two-thirds, I guess they need two-thirds for formal embrace of these positions. If we had not read what we read a week ago, Irene Monroe, would you be as disappointed today as you are? You wouldn't, right?
I'm disappointed anyway about the Catholic Church. I mean, because I think one of the things we think is because the Pope has a sort of conciliatory, you know, tone, that he's going to bring about policy. This is two problems I have. One is sort of this sort of incongruity of a cohort of celibate men discussing the place of birth control, rearing children, and marital relationships for non-celibate Catholics. That's one of the problems. Then this whole notion of the traditional family. What is the traditional family? They say they want to roll back to the traditional family. Well, the traditional family looks like this. It's Mary, Jesus, and Joseph. Mm-hmm. Now, truth be told, that configuration is suspect. We call it in seminary a hermeneutic of suspicion. Mm-hmm. Mary, okay, she's supposedly a virgin, but if we look at what that meant, it meant a young woman. Joseph is not Jesus' biological family.
Yeah, very irregular.
Okay, so the point is that is the American family. That is the traditional family. So they have what, as I said before, not only a crisis of faith, but identity and integrity. And they negate the whole idea of what Catholic means. Catholicity means universal, means inclusion. So they have just reneged on their social gospel.
Marjorie, why don't you give your prediction that you gave me earlier this morning about what's going to happen next year?
A couple of things. Number one, it's an international church. And mm-hmm. in a lot of these countries, it's illegal to be gay. You can still be arrested. So you have these cardinals from these very backward places that are in there. That's number one. Number two, the Pope can do whatever the heck he wants at the end of the Second Synod.
When is that? Next year?
Yes, that's in 2015. He can do whatever he wants. And he talked about hostile rigidity. And he was talking about people that have these attitudes about gays and lesbians, et cetera. And
people
about,
meaning cardinals?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. So I'm with Emmett over here. I if he survives and he doesn't die, I mean, he's not that old, but he's old. He's in his late 70s, and no one knocks him off because they're so upset about his views. I'm hoping that at the end of 2015, he'll be like John the 23rd and say, the heck with you all. This is where we're going.
Yeah. Okay, but you know what? He needs to really make a robust sort of affirmation of LGBT people or those of us on the margin. So let me give you an example. So he says here, a quote from him, he says, the church can neither throw stones at sinners, nor be too accommodating to a worldly spirit. So I find that as a theological qualifier. You know, the whole notion of hate the sin, but hate the sinner. So and so that, again, needs some working. Either he's being duplicitous, or he's trying to walk a very fine line and is not being successful.
Or he is politically trying to bring these people along so that he doesn't have to totally do a 180 on what they ultimately vote next year, which is what you and Marjorie think.
He has the bridge. He has the bridge. So he had to open up the conversation. He took the pulse of the International Catholic Church by leaking out that that 1 week synopsis of what the conversation was. You know, it didn't go that way, but now everything is on the table. We have a whole nother year until about October 2015 for some more conversation.
Oh, so you're going to keep hope alive, I assume.
Well, one last thing. Not that I wish anyone's untimely death, but a lot of these cardinals are very old. They age out at like 80. Most of them have been appointed by real rabid conservatives, Benedict and John Paul II. So my hope is that a few of them will be they'll be gone. He'll be able to appoint a few more of his own guys, and the people he's appointed have been much more liberal.
Oh, you are just
and some may be demoted.
Can you tell me one of these guys?
That guy Burke, Cardinal Burke.
He was one of the most vehement
saying, you know, talking about, you know, homosexual acts is disordered and always wrong and always evil. He got the shove out. He was in charge like the equivalent of the
Supreme
Court.
This past week
over
he got the shove
out?
Yes,
and now he's got some little inconsequential job someplace else.
He's probably
else,
gay so. Himself.
Can I tell you? Well, it's possible. Can I tell you something?
Well, a lot of them probably are.
I was very much closer to you, Irene, this morning when I got here. But after having listened to Marjorie a little bit, and you who raised this transparency point, Charlie Sennett was with us earlier this morning. And he was quoting John Ireland, your colleague.
Cruxnow.com.
Talking about the transparency thing. And it seems to me that what I'm reading into it, that what Pope Francis's agenda is, let the light shine
in,
and then it's going to create more pressure on these, I was going to say men and women, on these men to do the right thing by whatever date you said, October of 2015. By the way, everybody's got to be disappointed
by the
flip. But the issue is, what does it bode for the future?
Right.
You think
a schism in the Catholic Church, I think that's what it's going to bode. Huh. I mean, when you look at the bishop in New York, I can't think of
Dolan.
Dolan, okay, charismatic as can be, darling, but as conservative as can be. He doesn't want to bring change. And so that's the thing, because they're very set on that while we all live in sin, we're constantly live in sin, and the only way that we can really sort of make amends for the way we live in sin is to adhere to the edicts of the Catholic Church.
There's an old saying that the they today may not be the they tomorrow.
Well, the point is
ooh, I
like that, Emmett. I like that. Okay. But the point is, you're thinking that these people are going to die. Well, it would have to be a tsunami of death, really, in order for it to really have a sea change.
You don't think the demotion of this
25
but wait
or
a
30.
Second. You don't think the demotion of this Cardinal Burke that Marjorie and Emmett are talking about sends a message?
It says that you can have these thoughts, and we will probably implement these thoughts. You just need to be on the down low about it.
How do you think, while he released the roll call, as you were mentioning, mm-hmm. Emmett, mm-hmm. and what the vote total was and what the language was, obviously, we don't know. This is not like a Senate vote where you get to find out the Cardinal so-and-so voted this way. How do you think Cardinal O'Malley voted on all this stuff? And by the way, the moderate positions, let me just say, the moderate positions, the modified positions on gay marriage, on gays, and on divorced people, while they were moderated, they didn't get the two-thirds. And a lot of people think they didn't get the two-thirds because the progressives, who are really angry with the watering down of the language, voted no on the more moderate language. So it didn't get the two-thirds. actually is a protest vote, which I find, if it's true, to be fairly comforting. How do you think O'Malley voted on this?
I have no idea, but I hope he voted on the moderate side, the Pope side.
You don't
the
mean moderate.
Side.
You mean the progressive
side. Progressive side.
Yes. Yeah. I could be wrong, but they're fairly close, and I would think that that's part of the reason that they're fairly close is they share a similar worldview on some of these things, I hope. Mm-hmm.
So are we down to 1.75 on a scale of, where are we? I just want to know for next week's developments. Where are we exactly?
And trying to keep hope alive, and I'm very
Thank
much
you.
Trying to.
Thank yeah. you.
Okay, it has slipped to a two.
A two. Oh, well, only to a two.
Slipped back
Too
to
bad.
A slow.
That's hope.
Two.
Well, that is
for Irene,
beautiful.
That's
right.
Great.
We could be at a minus, you know, talking here. So let's move on to this story about Darren Wilson. Everyone knows the terrible story out of Ferguson, Missouri, where Michael Brown was killed, an unarmed young man, by this police officer, Darren Wilson. And now he has an account saying that he was afraid. By the way, it is different from the account of the friend of Michael Brown. But in any case, he's given this account that he was feared for his life, that after he stopped—
Darren Wilson did.
The cop feared for his life, that's right, that he was trying to leave his car after he stopped Brown and his friend when Brown pushed him back in. Once inside the car, the two began to fight. Wilson says he removed his gun and the holster. Wilson said Brown punched and scratched him repeatedly, leaving swelling on his face and cuts. This, again, contradicts with what the friend who was there said. And according to the cop, Brown never tried to grab, according to the friend, rather, Brown never tried to grab Wilson's gun. It doesn't change what happened outside the car, which is still that he shot four more bullets at Brown outside the car. But what do you make of this? Does this change anything in terms of the investigation or the public outrage here?
Yeah, I mean, it changes the fact that the grand jury has still been going at this. They have an extension until January 7th, and that's ludicrous. Mm-hmm. And I understand that they're a part-time grand jury, that they really only meet maybe once a month, maybe for 4 to 6 or 7 hours. But there's enough information to suggest that something happened and that they can allow this to go to trial. You know, Robert McCullough, who's the prosecuting attorney, has these issues in terms of if they go too soon without all the information, then he could be exonerated or, you know, whatnot. But I think they need to indict him, go to trial, and move forward. What we do know is that two shots were fired in the car.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we do know that Michael Brown was hit in the car. And there's blood
in
the arm. And there was blood on the door. Then we know that Michael Brown's blood. Then we do know that he was released somehow from the car and got a distance away
and then was shot at
four additional times where he was murdered. So I think there's enough information to create this suspicion of what happened. And now that we know that Darren Wilson was afraid of his life, afraid for his life, we do know that his own emotional situation was not stable, having, you know, being a law officer, particularly since Michael Brown was away from him when those final shots were shot.
Well, may I ask you a question here? Maybe I missed this. But if this police officer was punched and scratched repeatedly, leaving swelling on his face and cuts on his neck,
okay,
have we had verification of that or pictures of the police officer taken at the back at the station house that would show
no,
that?
It hasn't
been released.
Doesn't that seem odd?
With George Zimmerman, if you recall, he did say that he was fighting for
yes.
his life, and indeed there was some evidence of it. It still doesn't certainly exonerate the excessive force that
yeah.
was used.
Yeah.
You know, the very interesting thing is I do believe that Darren Wilson was fearful, because one of the things that we don't address is that white cops and have a fear of black men. And so I really wanted to know what exactly, you know, how was that calibrated? Because, you know, other than that, you're hearing stories. So, of course, you know, Jim and Marjorie and Emmett.
And Emmett even, too.
To Emmett, too. I had to go find another survey, right? So according to a range of surveys and that look at implicit associations around implicit bias and what have you, that white Americans are more afraid of black men than any group in the country. And they found that that in a survey of in 2009, when they asked a question about violence and blacks, that an overwhelming 90% say that the face of that, the nexus of that too, is indeed a black male.
Do you know who also said once, and I'm going to paraphrase, that if he turned around and was followed by a bunch of black kids, he'd be more scared than he's followed by a bunch of white Jesse Jackson.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that changed briefly right after 9/11 when people were briefly more afraid of groups of young Muslim men. Muslim, remember that? Yeah. Yeah, and we did a funny story
about
that.
No, I don't think so, because one of the things that we forget, though, is that blacks are also Muslims. And how we get the religion, mm-hmm. Islam, comes through the slave trade.
Yeah.
And so when Obama, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
You're not
I've done
first.
It a million times. Osama Obama.
Okay.
We know who you're talking about. By the way, I want you to know, Emmett Price is so disgusted with what you're saying, Irene. He's already packed up his stuff and apparently is ready to go. I don't blame you.
Usually,
you
know what? I usually pack up
Can
fast.
I tell you, when I heard the initial reports, virtually everybody, including reporters who are trying to play it down the middle, and I would say CNN generally does, are saying that this report's broken by the New York Times, by the way, helps the case of the Darren Wilson side of things. And even if you subscribe to that, I think your point was perfect, Emmett. There is enough dispute about the facts. Send it to trial.
Yeah,
there is clearly enough credible evidence from the Dorian Johnsons of the world, who was his friend, mm-hmm. who was there, mm-hmm. other witnesses who suggest the kid, Michael Brown, did nothing.
Yeah.
Obviously, apparently, Wilson's going to testify otherwise. Mm-hmm. That's why you have juries to distinguish between two different set of facts. Can I ask one more thing before you speak? And this is to you, Marjorie, as a journalist. Are you stunned? How many months ago did this happen, by the way? Do we know exactly?
It was in August, wasn't
August
it?
9th.
Okay, August 9th, September, October. It is a couple of months and a half.
Yeah.
Are you stunned that no reporter has found Darren Wilson in 2.5 months? We know he allegedly left Ferguson, but no reporter has even knocked on a door which Wilson is behind. That is staggering to me.
I agree.
Isn't
Absolutely.
It? I don't mean they're not trying.
They may have.
What? And because we're national security, they're not disclosing that they found
him? Well, if he doesn't talk to you, you don't.
Well, you know what? They'd have those horrible television
things
where the reporter's shown knocking on the door and someone behind the door says, I'm sorry, we're not answering. Irene, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. What I wanted to just say is that what's very, very interesting is that, Darren Wilson felt very frightened of these two boys, and which is very interesting. And just this weekend was a pumpkin fest that got rowdy as can be.
Yeah,
and anybody know anything about Keene, New Hampshire? It is predominantly white.
New Hampshire.
Well, that too. Okay? but the interesting thing is that rowdiness did not end with anybody's child being killed. So
you know what, though? I thought you were going to say, can you imagine if that had been a bunch of young black men and women?
Can you imagine that would have been crazy.
It would have been. We would have hauled in the Marines. Mm-hmm. Would have been up there. I didn't even think of that when we were talking about
That's
it.
That's a wonderful point. You know, before you go, since we're trying to end occasional segments on an upbeat note, which we almost never do anymore, no matter who we're talking about. This Bishop Thomas Shaw, former Episcopal leader here, died at 69. I never met him, but I have never read a negative word. In fact, I've never read anything except positive. What's the word on this guy, Emmett, particularly in the religious community?
Sure. I mean, for anybody who would go down to Washington, D.C. and be a legislative intern, I mean, for this person of high, ecclesiological, standing, is just awesome. I mean, very quiet spoken.
Very humble,
very, very spiritual is the term that many people. I was in the room with him one time where we were talking about youth violence issues. I believe it was in the South End where the meeting was. And this gentleman sat there with his characteristic black robe, mm-hmm. and didn't say anything the whole time. But you knew that his presence was there and you knew people kept deferring to him. So it was almost as if he had people in the room who would speak for him, even though he didn't have to say anything.
He walked the walk. He didn't just talk it, which was really wonderful. I remember he had a profound impact in shaping my public ministry.
Really?
As a minister. Absolutely.
How so?
And I'll always remember this quote. He says that our public life is very much part of our religious journey. And he really sort of deflates this sort of dichotomy we have between the sacred and profane, that there's a fluidness. Mm-hmm. And he walked with that sort of fluidity through life and stuff. And he did a lot around gang violence, mm-hmm. Really nurturing black males, also helping folks, folks who want to come, LGBT folks.
Well, here's this quote. Listen to this quote.
Through the Episcopal Church.
And remember, this is quite a while ago. This is not like a week ago. Kind of the key advocate, according to the Globe Obituary, which is great, by the way, for gay rights, for the ordination of women, gays, and lesbians. It was written by Brian Marquardt in The Globe. Listen to this great quote. The life of the church is always enhanced by including people that live on the margins of society. Mm, women,
right.
People of color, gay or lesbian people. They have something profound to say about the kingdom of God, and they are the people Jesus specifically included amongst his disciples.
See, that's an amen moment.
How powerful.
That's right.
Is that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Living a sort of liberation theology that was inclusive of all, that shows the Catholicity of what a church should do.
Well, you know, I think to get back to the Pope, and that's with the Pope, and when he talked about them being, and this means the cardinals, obsessed with things about gender and sex, he was absolutely right.
Yeah.
If they were saying you got to pick up the pace on taking care of the poor, would anybody be hysterical angry?
No issue.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's not surprising, a bunch of guys living alone, isolated from the world.
Supposedly celibate men.
Supposedly celibate men.
Talking about a non-celibate population.
Yeah. And
about
women,
family. And,
and sex.
And you still keep hope alive on this?
Jim, we had a high note for a second.
We did, actually.
Okay. All right.
At that note, thank you.
All right.
It's great to see you both, as always.
I try to be optimistic. You know, I try to be optimistic. Okay. The Reverend Irene Monroe gave the Pope, would you give him a 2.2 or something?
A 2.0.
No,
2.0. Okay. All right.
He's gone down on my scale.
He's gone down.
We're not going to ask her what she gave the Synod, by the way. That we don't even want to hear that.
Okay.
See
thank you both.
Both
for being here, as always. Reverend Irene Monroe is a syndicated religion columnist. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. His latest book is The Black Church and Hip-Hop Culture Toward Bridging the Generational Divide. Thanks again, you guys, for coming in. Up next, we continue our series of ballot question explainers. Question number 4, Paid Sick Days Initiative. That's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.